Next case is 95-2224, State of Ohio X-Rail, WHIO-TV7, 95-2356, State of Ohio X-Rail, WDTN-TV2 versus Ronald Lowe et al.
Public records, how do you get beyond the exception under 149?
Your Honor, a number of the documents could still be subject to the old exemptions under 149.43. They could be trial preparation documents, they could be Sekman. Sekman did not change that as long as they are also subject to being discoverable under Criminal Rule 16. Sekman was designed to prevent the type of abuse that was going on with many of the post-conviction relief proceedings. Sekman drew out certain parameters under which the documents were to be produced. That parameter, which this court laid out in syllabus 3 and 5, is now being used to prevent access to documents that were accessible pre-Sekman. Your Honor, I am going to turn over to my colleagues.
Before you do, agree, however, under your constitutional argument, do you not, that if it is not discoverable under Rule 16, doesn't have to be turned over by the prosecutor, falls within the exception, one of the exceptions in 149.43, that it is not discoverable by the media? You agree with that?
We would agree with that, Your Honor.
Who determines that? I mean, that could then be determined, and that's the problem we had before, was before Sekman, was that a lot of these requests for documents, as you know, came in 149 hearings, not in a discovery hearing. It seems to me is that backwards?
No, it'd be the same analysis and the same approach that was used pre-Sekman. The request would be made, the initial determination would be made by the recipient of the request, the custodian of the records. They would determine whether the exemptions would apply, and they would also determine whether they were discoverable under Criminal Rule 16. If they satisfied both of those tests, then they would be disclosed.
Well, as you know, the Court of Appeals and the appellees argue that there are different considerations in a determination of whether certain documents are discoverable for purposes of the defendant preparing his or her defense than a TV station, for example, news media, seeking those documents to distribute them or disperse them to the public. You've argued this in your brief. I'd like to hear your strongest response to that argument.
Well, the argument that is made against the discovery is that these documents could be prejudicial to the prosecution or prejudicial to the defense. That is the same argument that this court addressed in many of its early cases on access to courtroom proceedings. When you have these arguments being made that you risk the defendant's right to a fair trial, the role of the court and its job is to balance, to determine whether there are certain steps that need to be taken short of exclusion of the public and the media from a trial, whether other protective schemes could be implemented, such as extensive voir dire, change of venue, other actions of this type that could protect the rights of the defendant. As far as the rights of the prosecution are concerned, and they do, of course, have the right, that is not a right that is paramount to the right of the media to access documents that are already being shared by the prosecution with the defendant. If the prosecution is turning over these documents to defense, it should not now be heard to say that these documents will prejudice the ability of them to properly prosecute their case.
Is that the status of the written and recorded statements of defendants Ritchie and Brooks?
That would be them, yes, sir.
They were furnished to the defendants?
It was my understanding that they were.
And was that also the status of the lab reports and sketches and diagrams?
We were advised that as far as scientific tests and polygraph reports, there were none that existed. So those are really out of the case.
What about the photographs?
Photographs, we're not sure what the status is on those. I know that those exist. It's my understanding that they were turned over to the defense. We have one aspect that has a little bit of gloss to this, because this is a case that arose in Montgomery County where you have open file discovery as opposed to the strict restrictions of Criminal Rule 16.
Do you still have that?
Yes, sir.
Counsel, is your view that once a document is determined to be discoverable under 16B, that it thereby loses any exemption under 149 as a trial preparation method?
We would make that assertion, but it doesn't lose all exemptions under 149.43. There could be other documents
Okay, but I was just asking about that.
Under the trial preparation, yes, we would.
And yet, Steckman, I mean, I don't know how you reconcile the Steckman syllabus that says that once something is determined to be a trial preparation record, that it retains that status until all proceedings, actions, et cetera, are concluded. How will this, you know, that seems to fly in the face of saying that once it's labeled a 16B discoverable document, that it then that determines its status.
Your Honor, one of your recent decisions since Steckman took the position that once a document is disclosed,
you re-discarded that.
It then loses its exemption, and that would be our argument. It has been disclosed, it therefore has lost its exemption.
Thank you, Mr. Fortune. Mr. Sander.
May it please the Court, picking up on your concerns, Justice Cook, what we have is that in paragraphs 3 and 5 of the syllabus is a litmus test, so to speak, and the segment sought to enable Article 1, Sequence Section 149-43 to be uniformly applied to either civil, criminal, and in short, any person seeking public records. And this fits with the purpose and history of public records in Ohio, and that the legislature has taken a very strong stand and dictated that these records are public, and only when filtered through this public record statute can they be withheld pursuant to certain exceptions. In clarifying the work product and trial preparation exception to ensure uniform application of those exceptions, this Court said that when those documents are discoverable under Criminal Rule 16B, they are therefore not subject to the trial preparation or work product exceptions.
In that Carpenter case, the argument was made that anything that it was a prosecutor file argument primarily. And so I think the Court made that distinction that in the file doesn't necessarily equate to trial preparation record. But I know that your argument then is that the Court went further and said it can't be the trial preparation record if it's discoverable under 16.
That's correct, because that's the only way we're going to have uniform application of trial preparation and work product exceptions. And when you look at the history of the work product and trial preparation exceptions from Hickman v. Taylor, you see that their purpose is to protect the adversarial litigation process. In other words, protect one counsel's work product or his investigator's work product from preparing the information for trial.
In Carpenter, though, the situation was the case was concluded, the appeal was concluded. Does that make a difference in your analysis?
Not once the information has been released. This information is releasable under Criminal Rule 16B. I am responding to your question.
Do you think it's during trial?
Yes.
Let me explore that with you. The interests of the parties are different, aren't they? That is, the people, the parties, general term, seeking the information. In the discovery proceeding, it's the defendant to prepare for his or her defense, seek certain information that the prosecutor has. That's a very different concern, or the trial court is looking at it differently, I would think, than someone else just seeking information to disperse it to the public. Should we not apply a different test? In other words, say that the fact that something is discoverable for purposes of a defendant preparing for his or her defense doesn't necessarily mean that is information that the public should necessarily have in view of the prosecution and the defense interest in having a fair trial.
Well, you're absolutely correct, Chief Justice, in that there are different objectives and motives for the parties obtaining this information, but as this Court held in Steckman, that's not a concern under the public records. The motivation and intent for which someone wants to obtain a public record is irrelevant, and so I don't think we should concern ourselves with that here, whereas all we're trying to do is make a uniform standard where either, you know, any person, regardless of their interest or situation, can have access to the Public Records Act as the legislature intended and obtain these public records. Although the interests of the parties may be different, the fact that managing the records we sought here were in the control of the public agency, the prosecutor's office or the police department in this instance, and that under the Public Records Act,
this order that you seek, would that also require anything that the defense has under Rule 16 and turns over to the prosecution becomes public record also?
Well, Your Honor, with the defense, we're not starting with the public agency under the Public Records Act.
But it's ending up in a public agency's lap. Are you saying that that can stay confidential then?
No, I mean, if it were to make its way into the public agency's hands and be retained by them, then I would say the statute would apply, but then I would also point to the other exceptions.
Under what basis? Because now you don't have Rule 16 forcing the prosecutor to give it up. You have the prosecutor getting it from the defense attorney. Your argument is different than that, Nathan.
No, it's still subject to 16B. It's just that it's coming the other way through the channel. But it's still subject to the same 16B criteria. And the information is the same as categorized by 16B.
So your basic theory is that anything that either side gets from the other, the public ought to have a right to know, you ought to have a right to broadcast, you ought to have a right to analyze, and create this enormous burden then on the court to try to figure out a way to protect the fair rights of the defendants and the state.
With all respect, Your Honor, we're not creating the burden. It's the legislature of Ohio that is granting the public the right to access to these records.
Counselor, I take it you'd agree that a written confession by a defendant is discoverable and has to be turned over by the prosecutor to the defendant pursuant to Rule 16.
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct.
We have another rule that says the prosecutors may not disclose in the public domain the confession of the defendant. How do we reconcile those two on behalf of the prosecutors? And it's a very clear admonition. Now, I know one federal district court, I think in the Southern District, held it to be unconstitutional for some other reasons. But that rule says prosecutors cannot disclose on the basis of making sure the defendant has a fair Sixth Amendment trial right. That has to be, you say it has to be disclosed to the defendant, therefore you can get it from the prosecutor, and then is in trouble for disclosing it.
Your Honor, that sounds to me like something the legislature should revisit in terms of crafting an additional exception to public records.
It's not the legislature's rule, it's our rule. And it's the rule the prosecutors are supposed to live by. You haven't considered that issue?
I haven't considered that.
You have used your time, Mr. Sanders. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Ingram.
Agencies and prosecutors, because cases were coming in where the defendant was asking for the entire prosecutor's file, the vindicator case. So So we thought something needed to be done in that area to protect your file, your investigative file. We also took pains, however, to warn that you ought not to carry that too far. Isn't this carrying it too far? I mean, very clearly the third syllabus says if it's discoverable under 16, then in effect it's a public record.
With all due respect, that's exactly what the other side and our side have been arguing about. Passionately, with lots of research and in good faith for months and months. And my contention, based on my reading, is that the decision in Stegman simply requires for a launch or warrant to prosecutors that the fact that this information is not a public record and is not subject to release because trial preparation, because it's for product, prosecutors cannot use that as an excuse to not provide discovery. That irrespective of the record status as trial preparation or investigatory work product, that it must be, if it is discoverable, provided to defense counsel.
I've read your brief, so I know your response, but tell me now, again, how you can read what it says, information not subject to discovery pursuant to 16, contained in the file of the prosecutor, is not subject to release as a public record. Wouldn't ergo it then say, information subject to discovery pursuant to Rule 16 is a public record? Or should we have gone on in every case now, because if we do it in this case, we have to say information not subject to discovery pursuant to the rule is not a public record. Therefore, if it is subject to 16, it is a public record. Do we have to go on and say that in every case?
No, because this is the basis for my interpretation of that syllabus. And we are talking about interpretations because, you know, both sides in this action are looking at the same language and saying it means this, it means that. So, you know, and now I look at it as clear as me, and they look at it as clear as them.
It's clear to me when I wrote it.
I understand.
I'm not sure it was clear to me when I voted for it.
But please let me say, when you say in syllabus 3, subject to discovery, that involves criminal rule 16. And criminal rule 16 is relational. It applies strictly to prosecution and defense. Criminal rule 16 governs discovery between two parties. Look at syllabus 5. The language is even clearer there, where it says, except as required by criminal rule 16. Well, criminal rule 16 requires the prosecutor to give the defense certain information. That's all.
Maybe the solution is what Justice Pfeiffer's been suggesting since he's been here. Let's do the same thing that you do over there in Dayton. Let's just throw it all open and give everybody everything. Maybe that's the answer?
Well, in Montgomery County, voluntarily the prosecutor's office does engage in expanded, not completely open file discovery, but the practical difference is that we routinely turn over police reports and witness statements to the defense. Now, as I understand the related theory in this case, the appellant theory in this case, that too then, because it was turned over, would have lost the protection afforded to it as a trial preparation record or as a specific investigatory work product.
That's right. The majority of us have said under 16, you don't have to turn over everything, notwithstanding the local rule. What is it, local rule 20?
313.
Of the Montgomery County rules. And I don't know. I think that if you're going to take that advantage of Stegman, maybe the answer is to just have you give everything to them. You sure complained about that when a rule like that was sent over to the General Assembly.
Tell me the harm that you see coming out of information being given to the defendant under 16 then being disseminated to the general public. Where is the real problem that you see in yourself?
Our overriding concern is that making that information a public record will frustrate police officers in their efforts to solve crimes, investigate crimes, and will hamper the prosecution. This is an example.
They will frustrate the police in their investigation.
Certainly, because
If
they want to keep everything secret, right?
Well, first of all, it's not going to be secret forever. Under Stegman, the protected status ends at the end of the criminal case, at the end of post-conviction action, so it's not going to be shielded forever. Secondly, in a situation where, and every prosecutor will tell you that, particularly in cases involving sexual abuse involving children where the child is named a relative as having molested her, she named him, thrown out of the house, she often put it on the trigger, that, you know, her life is turned upside down.
So then in one type of case, in one very one type, there may be something wrong.
That's simply an example of the kind of problem. The state has to then, has to, not only under Brady, but under Criminal Rule 16, advise the defense of a victim's recantation because it's material favorable to the defense. Well, then that then, under that theory, would become public information. Would be available as public record. But at that point in the prosecution, if a person, has a victim has recanted, then the state and the defense are an incredibly sensitive and important point, and they've got to figure out whether or not this victim made up the story in the first place and falsely accused somebody, and now the state's prosecuting, or whether or not the victim is recanting out of fear or something like that. Now, that incredibly sensitive kind of inquiry that has to be made right away would be terribly hammered if that information was out of the high profile cases that were reported. Now, eventually, that information, we're not, under segment, that information is not forever sealed. It becomes available at some later time at the end of all the deals. But during the
other section, who is worried at that point?
But in a way, when we're talking about the motivation is irrelevant. You know, and I understand that the reason that the media makes it wasn't is newsworthy. But the fact that it's newsworthy, I don't think should override any other kind or be more important than any other citizen's request for information.
Yeah.
Only to the extent that we're talking about the First Amendment, and that's the constitutional argument that he's making, but just for a public record to be questioned in 149.3, the motive is irrelevant.
Counsel, I have a slightly different take on Stegman, and maybe if we had it back, I would vote differently because our rule didn't pass that I thought was going to happen in tandem with Stegman. The rule follows what you do in Montgomery County. On this particular case, I guess I have the impression that the prosecution and the defense are united in their view that this particular information should not be turned over because of concerns about what it might do on the fair trial issues. Is that correct?
It's correct.
All right. Now, is there anything, when you take our decisions and the rule together, that prohibits the prosecution from selectively saying, you know, or move to another county, we want to pitch all this to the press, even though we're not going to give it to, even things we might not give to the defendant, we're going to let the press see our file, our call, our option, our work product.
We're not going to see that under TR 7, 107, Prohibition B, forbidden from making that information available.
So that little indiscretion on the part of prosecutors is foreclosed.
That's right. I guess what we're fighting about here is what is said to be. Ultimately, my position is that it means that this information doesn't lose its protected status.
Well, isn't, I'm going to ask you the same question. I did. Discovery to me was always a private process between the, whether it's civil or criminal case, between the plaintiff and the defendant or the state and the defendant? And how does it suddenly become a public record because it's disclosed? It's being disclosed during the trial preparation, the trial process. How in the world can it become a public record? And I don't think we've written anything that has indicated that.
According to, I think that's the jump that my opponents take it.
They want this to be the next step to be.
But if you look at the case I cited in my brief, Seattle Census v. Reinhart, the United States Supreme Court specifically talks about the fact that this was a First Amendment case, and it was a civil case, but you know, the principle is the same. Discovery is traditionally not a public part of the trial. It's traditionally private. The court in that particular case did not abuse its discretion in allowing discovery to proceed, but the event chamber in this case is from using that information for other than discovery. Finally, just to get back to the question you asked me at the very beginning, I asked you to look at case 435-6, where in the decision it says, I'm having now barred defendants and all others from obtaining this
information that is exempt under 149.43, not that it is disclosed. Let me go back to VR, because that's what we're talking about, VR 7107B. Didn't the federal district court, maybe Judge Graham, hold that unconstitutional? Do you remember that case?
I think
the federal court held, because that's very clear with regard to specific things that a prosecutor can't do. You can't disclose your reputation or prior criminal record. Well, you have to give the prior criminal record to the defendant when you're 16. The possibility of plea of guilty, the existence or contents of any confession, admission or statement given by the accused or his refusal or failure to make a statement. Says you can't disclose that.
So what do we do then?
Well, that's why I asked him the question.
We cannot, under DR 707, if I get a request for information in my file, then I can, if I turn it over to the confession,
I'm just filing
the
DR 707. So if that rule's there, you have an irreconcilable conflict. If that rule isn't there, and I'll find the case, I'm sure, for Judge Graham, if that rule isn't there, that ought to be pretty clear.
I don't think I have an irreconcilable conflict because under my, the reading of the second line of the charge that I think I'm in my brain, I wouldn't be in that position.
Okay. Let's assume that I interpret Steckman that it has to be released.
Right. In that case,
then you have an irreconcilable conflict.
Yes, absolutely.
Unless 107 is gone.
That's correct. And I don't know that it's
just
too.
I'll find
points.
It.
Yeah, before you sit down, Mr. Justice Stratton asked an interesting question. That is, what about information coming into your file? Wasn't a public record. Now it's in your file. Furnished to you by the defendant. What's your take on that?
It's such a typical discovery.
Yeah, the question that Justice Stratton put out.
And now it's in my file. Okay.
Yeah.
Under the language in segment under 149.43, I don't believe that would become then a public record simply because it's in my file because I got it from defense counsel. It's not, well.
I don't know.
If it's in my file, if the defense counsel gave me their discovery information, it's in my file. It's now subject to discovery. It's a trial preparation record because it's a matter. Yes. Yeah, then it would be under my discretion, then it would be a public record. Seeing that it did not have to turn, then I would have to release it on request. If
their interpretation is that.
Sure.
I'm going to ask you to, if you have the lights on, and Mr. Krumholz is anxiously hoping he can get some time by the grace of the chair.
Well, in conclusion, then, I'm just asking the court to hold then that simply because information is provided in discovery, it does not lose the protection, the benefit of otherwise enjoyed in the preparation for the investigatory work product.
Thank you, Ms. Ingram. Mr. Krumholz, take 2 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Court. My name is Mike Krumholz, and I'm the attorney for Teresa Gilman Rich.
came here to talk about Rule 16 and 149.43 of the Revised Code operating in separate spheres, and to ask this court to determine that discoverability under Rule 16 does not necessarily mean that a record is a public record under that statute. But after listening to the questioning, I should say, in response to Justice Pfeiffer, to your question, the prosecution and the defense in this matter are united with a fundamental concern about the rights of the parties, the state of Ohio on the one hand, my client in this instance on the other hand, to a fair trial. If certain material is disseminated by the press prior to and during the actual trial of a very highly publicized criminal proceeding. However, having said that, the Court of Appeals in this instance did not make a fair trial determination in concluding that these particular records were not accessible, fell into the exceptions under the public records statute. The court made a determination before reaching the fair trial consideration that these records were not accessible.
Let me tell you my concern, Counselor. It used to be 100 years ago when I was practicing, but the theory was that a trial is a search for truth. Now suddenly it's how much can we keep from the other side, and particularly from the public who's paying all of our salaries, except the private attorneys, I agree, and maybe you were appointed in this case.
I was appointed.
So we're paying you too. The public is paying for this entire thing, and yet we're now saying the search for the truth is secondary, really, to whether or not all this could be in the public domain, or any of it could be in the public domain. If there isn't anything to hide, what's the problem?
Your Honor, as you know, being a jurist and longstanding, being a lawyer, you know, a greater appointment to the bench, being in that position.
Election, I'm sorry.
In those circumstances, there are records which are produced in discovery, which will not be found admissible in the trial of a lawsuit, whether it be a civil suit or a criminal case. Confessions, sometimes though made, are determined by the court to be inadmissible at trial. If those materials are disseminated because the court finds that Rule 16 and the Public Records Act are somehow coextensive, the discoverability means public record. If something like that is disseminated before the trial judge can make a determination as to admissibility, and in the instance I'm talking about, if admissibility is denied, it seems to me that shows the basic problem with this kind of access that the media is seeking in this case.
Oh, but you stop short, because we have provided in our rules all sorts of other remedies for that sort of thing, rather than taking things out of the public domain. For instance, if that happens, then there's an ability to change venue, like we did in the cult killings up in Kirk.
And I'm before you in the unique circumstance of having asked for a change in venue, and that was denied as a matter of basically another appeal that's pending. I say to you in that circumstance, Your Honor, that there's something wrong with equating Criminal Rule 16 and the statute on public records. I see my time is up. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Felholz. Mr. Fortun, you've used your time, but Mr. Sanders? No.
Mr. Sorum.
I'm sorry. You're not checked in. Who are you?
Andrew Sorum, on behalf of the BDTA.
Okay. Our rule does provide that counsel are to check in and advise us who's arguing. Okay. Okay. You're not marked. I guess that's our fault, perhaps. Okay, let me tell you how much time you have. 30 seconds. You've used your time, so you have 30 seconds.
That's now up.
Right. We just used it.
The media does not want to participate in discovery in this matter. We're not taking the position that if it's discoverable under Rule 16b, it's ipso facto producible. We're taking the position that if it is discoverable under Rule 16b, it loses its trial preparation and work product exemption. Then you turn to the statute and look if anything else applies, such as if it's prohibited from disclosure by state and federal law, any other position, and any other exception in the statute. And that's the divergence in this case.
Including DR 7107.
Including DR 7107, but as I recall, I do remember Judge Graham finding that unconstitutional.
Was that who it was?
It was. And I also recall that
the disciplinary rule state law, because there's a fourth exception in 149.43 that says those records that are not, that are prohibited from release by federal or state law. Are our rules state law?
One of our cases said so, a majority said so,
some of us didn't think so.
I personally don't think they rise to the level of state law, but the determination, it seems to me, at that point would be whether there would be an impact on the defendant's right to a fair trial. It couldn't be remedied in any other fashion. And so, Your Honors, we would ask that the WDTN case be reversed and the writ issue in the WHI case.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.